Red Onion State Prison in Wise County, Virginia, near the town of Pound. Thanks also to Hannah Beckler, investigations editor for Insider. We'll link to her new investigation. Patrol dogs are terrorizing and mauling prisoners inside the United States. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for paid internships in our archive and development departments. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Oh, at our website, you can also sign up for our Daily News Digest email, or you can text the word Democracy Now!, that's one word, no space, to 66866. That's the word Democracy Now!, one word. Text it to 66866. You can watch and listen to Democracy Now! When you want by subscribing to our podcast in English and Spanish. Find them wherever you get your podcasts today. And visit our website.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
So, how much is that golden doodle or adorable Frenchie in the window? Probably a lot, especially in terms of suffering for its parents, who in many cases are living lives of misery in a puppy mill. On the next episode of Voices for the Animals, we'll be talking with Robert Hensley, senior counsel for the ASPCA, about their push to pass Goldie's Act, a bill now in Congress that would ensure better conditions and oversight for the hundreds of thousands of dogs now suffering at the hands of large-scale dog breeders.
The dog that Goldie's Act is named for was one of the dogs that lived in squalor and tragically was allowed to starved to death over several months while USDA inspectors observed her deteriorating condition, but did nothing to help her.
That's on the next Voices for the Animals, Friday, July 28th at 10 a.m. on 90.7 KBOO FM. If you love animals, and especially dogs, don't miss it.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gaskill. This is part two of my conversation with State Representative Mark Gamba, where we broke down the good, the bad, and the ugly of the 2023 legislative session. Mark Gamba represents House District 41, which encompasses Milwaukee, Oak Grove, and parts of Southeast Portland. As my former boss, I knew I could trust him to give an honest assessment of his first year in Salem, and he really delivered. You don't need to listen to episode one before jumping into the second half of our conversation, but I highly recommend listening to both episodes. You can find those and all of our episodes by searching for Coast Range Radio on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, any other podcast app, or by going to our website, coastrange.org. So in episode one, we talked about the Republican walkout, the lack of true climate leadership in Salem, Mark's take on his first legislative session, and a lot more. We start today's episode with a run-through of some of the bills that the Coast Range Association was tracking in 2023, and then we'll cover a lot more ground from there. So if you have any feedback or questions, my email is michael@coastrange.org, and I hope you enjoy the show. We've talked a lot about, I think, the bad and the ugly, which for good reason, not, you know, but
and we didn't even touch on all of the bad.
But, no. Yeah. and maybe we can, you know, we can make this a longer episode. But I do want to touch on, you know, on the good from your perspective. What were some, even if flawed, you know, what were some bills that made it through that are going to improve the lives of Oregonians that you feel good about?
So the early housing package should, over the long term, facilitate more housing being built, assuming we solve the workforce problem. That was a big deal, and the money that was put into that was also a big deal. So at least there is that opportunity. I would argue still that we have to fix the workforce problem. That is, right, that's the bottleneck. The problem is the things I cared about. It was a very disappointing session to me.
Okay. I mean, you know, that's fair.
It's hard for me to come up with really good, big things that we did that I think are going to actually make a powerful difference in many people's. So that's also part of it. There's a lot of bills that get passed that for 95% of the population, they're not going to mean anything. They're not going to, but for that 5%, right, they mean the world. Like the opportunity for a mom who has a disabled child to stay home and be the caregiver for that disabled child, that is everything to her. That's a big deal, right? So things like that did get passed. And you know, there was good work that was done. It's just, that's my problem with the overall process, is we don't make this priority list of, okay, these are the really critical issues that we have to make big moves on. We did it with housing-ish. I would say housing is the one that some good bills got passed that will eventually make a difference there.
Okay. Well, I'll just say, you know, in the interest of making sure that I at least touch on them in this wrap-up bill, you know, some of the bills that we discussed were, in previous episodes, were SB 530, which is the Natural and Working Lands Bill, which I understand got wrapped up into a larger climate package.
Right, 3409.
Yeah. And if you want, you know, if you have anything to say on that, but then some of the other bills, SB 58 was a factory farm moratorium. And we spoke with folks with the Stand Up to Factory Farms Coalition earlier this spring. My understanding is a watered down version of that bill got passed. And you can go to standuptofactoryfarms.org to kind of see their take on that.
Yeah, exceedingly watered down. Basically, the only thing it really solved, and it didn't utterly solve it, but solved pretty well, is the water aspect of factory farm.
Yeah. Do you know whether SB 58 will effectively prevent the large factory chicken farms that are being proposed in the Mid-Willamette Valley?
I doubt it.
Okay.
What it did, there's a thing called the stock water exemption. And what that means is you can use as much water as you need. You don't have to have water rights, blah, 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 to use water to water your stock. But it is lucrative enough that they can go out and purchase the water rights that they need. So, you know, that is right now the only limiting factor, is that you can't use the stock watering exemption for millions of chickens or millions of pigs or cows or whatever. We'll see how much it changes things.
For more information or to kind of keep up with that campaign, I would go to standuptofactoryfarms.org. Running down the quick list of our stuff that the Coast Range Association has been tracking, we were really sad to see that the Marine Reserve Bill, House Bill 2903, did not pass. There's a lot to say about that, and I hope to do a future episode specifically on that and the future of Marine Reserves coming up soon. So keep an eye on that.
I'd love to be engaged on that. That I was also very sad that that one didn't pass, and I was equally sad that the dredging bill for Coos Bay did pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I put a significant amount of effort into trying to stop that one, but I was kind of all by myself on that.
Yeah. Another bill that didn't make it through that I would like to get your take on is the OFRI reform bill. And if people don't know OFRI, it's the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, and it's basically a taxpayer-funded propaganda apparatus for the timber industry. And I know a lot of folks have been working really hard to either get rid of or reform that agency. So could you talk about, you know, why that didn't make it through and prospects for reform in the future of that agency? Because it really is just egregious, and it's wild that taxpayers are funding that agency.
Yes, it absolutely is. And there were, I think, at the start of session, maybe three bills that were trying to address it. One of them would have just gotten rid of it altogether and put the money that it used to have into firefighting. So OFRI isn't designed to be the PR arm of the timber industry. That was not what it was set out to be. And so they will lean on the fact that it still does some of what it was set out to do, which was to educate to, you know, small lot holders on changes in Oregon law or best practices or whatever like that, which is a useful thing. I think the problem is it's been co-opted by the corporate timber industry, and it does produce incorrect PR information, and that is what we tried to change. We tried to limit that aspect. And I can't tell you how many emails we got about that. People, you know, they acted like we were running over their dog. And, you know, I know that it's, you know, because Timber Unity is an incredibly good community organizer for its, you know, constituency, and they are proactive and they get emails out. And to tell you the truth, again, most legislators don't even know what OFRI is.
Mm.
Don't know why they should care about it. Don't know anything about it. So they gave a zillion emails talking about how this is a critical thing for the small lot woodland owners to be able to function and do the right environmental things with their forests. And it works. It works. Because people don't know.
Yeah.
So, I guess here's what I would offer is help educate your legislator, for starters. Do not assume that they know anything about it. And we keep trying. You know, it's egregious. It's not a, you know, is it going to solve all the problems? Not at all. But it is something that should change.
Yeah. So do you think there's prospects for continuing the effort to either dismantle or reform it over the coming sessions?
I would assume so, yeah. I know that Holvey, it's been, you know, one of the things that he's hated for a long time. And assuming the ridiculous recall doesn't actually work, you know, he'll be back.
And you're talking about Representative Paul Holvey, correct? From the West Eugene area, I believe?
Yeah.
And that the Oregonian ProPublica OPB series, Polluted by Money, where they kind of talked about how the timber industry has corrupted the legislature historically and removed most of their tax liability obligations through that corruption. That kind of touches on that, I believe, as well. So folks can search for the Polluted by Money series.
That's an absolutely brilliant thing to read. Interestingly, the person who kind of really broke that story was Emily Green in Street Roots, and then ProPublica and the Oregonian and all the kind of took it and ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Measure 5 and 50 was not designed to make your property taxes more affordable. It was designed to keep the timber industry from paying remotely what they should be paying. They're paying 10% of what they used to pay, 10%. And that's why all of the rural counties are suffering for money. It's not because of the spotted owl. It's because the timber industry is paying 1/10 of what they used to pay in taxes for the same amount of wood coming out of the forest. And that was what Measure 5 and 50 were designed to do. And until we reverse those that we've got a lot of problems. We will continue to struggle to educate our children, to pay to educate our children. Cities and counties will continue to struggle with their budgets. Fire districts and parks districts, anybody who depends on property taxes is going to continue to struggle, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse every year.
Well, you know, that's a perfect segue into a topic I wanted to ask you about, not related to the past legislative session, and that's industrial timberland reform. You know, Coast Range Association has put out a ton of research on the true impacts of industrial timberland ownership by Wall Street shell companies and has put forward some really visionary reform proposals for Oregon's industrial timberlands. And I believe you were recently at an event where our executive director, Chuck Willer, spoke about the Coast Range Association vision for land reform. I'd love to get your take on that, if you have thoughts, and what we can do in your mind as a legislator to move the ball forward on some kind of timberland reform that will not only benefit the ecosystems, but, you know, as we at the Coast Range Association are really concerned with, also our rural economies at the same time.
Right. No, I think the work you guys do and that he does is absolutely brilliant. His talk is very informative for people, and everyone should see it. I mean, everyone, and the legislature in particular should see it. Michael, the society we live in writ large is designed by and for the large corporations. And up to, you know, in a sane world, what would we do? The natural resources would all be publicly owned, and they would be operated to the best and highest benefit of the people, and obviously the planet, because people aren't going to survive on a dead planet. But that's not the way our laws are set up, and I have yet to see a concept. There's a lot of good ideas that nibble around the edges and start to get there, but to really, really shift the way this works, we have to make it so that it is not profitable to rape the forests. Because trying to take those properties away from the Wall Street timber companies, which would be the ideal, is virtually impossible in the current system. I mean, we would be bucking up against federal laws at that point.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we certainly aren't suggesting whatever you would call it, you know, taking
eminent domain. Like they use eminent domain every time they want to build a pipeline or they want to screw up the environment. We use eminent domain. Have we ever used eminent domain to protect the environment? Not that I'm aware of.
Well, now that is a fascinating point and question. Well, if there's any opportunity ever to get Chuck in front of some of your fellow legislators, let me know, and we'll get him there with his PowerPoint. In the meantime, if listeners are interested in hearing one of our talks, we are doing an ongoing speaking series throughout Western Oregon, and you can learn more about that just by emailing me, michael@coastrange.org, or if you keep an eye on our Facebook page or our website we put out when we've got events coming up. Well, Mark, before we wrap up, I wonder if there's anything in your mind that we've missed, any other impressions on your first legislative session that you'd like to share, or anything you just want to make sure gets included in this discussion.
Well, so one of the bills that I dropped that is actually a solution to the houseless issue didn't even get a hearing. And what it addresses is the fact that there are 2,000 families a month being evicted in the state of Oregon for inability to pay. Most of those families are working. To put a more fine point on it, the minimum wage, if you're making minimum wage in this state, which is relative to minimum wages other places, pretty good, it's still about half of what it takes to rent a one-bedroom apartment. Until we solve one end of that equation or the other, either we limit how much rents can go up in a real way, the bill that passed this year was a joke, or we cause people to be paid enough that they have a living wage. If they're working full-time, they can afford to live. We're going to continue to see masses of homeless people every month. We literally cannot build enough housing fast enough to solve for that. So my bill was a minimum wage bill. It would have raised the minimum wage slowly until it matched the cost of the average one-bedroom apartment. In other words, you should be spending no more than one-third of your income on housing. So to make it really easy, let's say that the average one-bedroom apartment was $1,500 a month. It's more than that, but we'll just do that for math's sake. Then the wage, minimum wage, would have to be $4,500 a month, whatever that calculates out to on an hourly basis. It's somewhere around $3 an hour. The two things that would do are obviously, if you're working full-time, you can afford a place to live. But more importantly, I think it's going to cause all of the people with money to actually start investing in housing instead of just profiting off of it, which is currently the way it works. There are entities that buy up housing and hold it empty to cause the cost of housing to go up more because it benefits them. We're not going to fix that until we make it painful for them to do that. So this is what I was talking about. You know, bills that will actually make a difference in the real world problems we're trying to solve didn't even get hearings because they're scared and they know that people would scream at them and there would be very organized and very wealthy opposition to concepts like that. So we need to start building a wave of people that understand why we need to pass these hard bills that can put the pressure on legislators to pass them. And that's just one example, right? We need to fix the kicker law. We sent back a lot of those bills that we lamented didn't pass because there wasn't the money for them. They didn't make it out of Ways and Means. And we sent back $5.5 billion to the richest Oregonians in the form of the kicker. So the kicker is based on how much you paid in taxes. So people who are making, you know, $40,000 a year, I don't know what their check's going to be. Maybe it'll be $500 or $600. But there are people who are going to get checks that are $130,000.
Right.
And that's where the vast majority of the money goes to.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, but the kicker isn't, I think most people think of the kicker as, if the legislature doesn't spend all of the money, then they send it back. But my understanding is actually it's just based on the economic forecast that somebody made like a year or two ago. So it's not based on anything in reality, but somebody's projection from years ago.
Yes, and it was literally designed to do what it's doing. It's designed to give the rich people back their money. So this is the way it works. 2 years in advance, the economists are required to create a prediction of what the state's income is going to be. If they are not, if that prediction doesn't land within 2% of reality, then it kicks. No one can predict the income of a state 2 years in advance within 2%. It's not possible to do. And they knew that when they wrote that law. The bill is literally designed to give rich people back their money.
Or our money, depending on how you look at it.
Well, yeah, money that exactly. It's money that we could be using to fund more mental health care, right? It's money that we could be using to fund, using forests in a more environmental way. All the things that didn't passed because there was no funding. There was no funding to continue to give rebates on EVs, right? There was no funding to do grants for electric bikes so that somebody could use that instead of driving a car every day. There were all kinds of bills that didn't pass because there was no funding. If you added up most of those bills, it probably would be around $5.5 billion.
Yeah, pretty insane situation there. It seems like everybody who's paying attention and aren't those rich people recognizes that the kicker is an issue, but year after year it doesn't get resolved and no progress gets made. Is there any hope for that?
I always have hope, Michael. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this. I'd be on a beach in Costa Rica. There are solutions to it. I have a proposal. If nothing better comes up between now and the 2025 session, we will drop that bill. I was working on it this session, trying to convince the powers that be to do it, but we'll keep working on that. Yeah, it's got to get fixed. I mean, the economist said, oh, we've got an idea for how to be more accurate about our predictions. I'm like, okay, best of luck with that.
Is this, because it deals with taxation, is this one of those things that has to get a 3/5 majority in the legislature?
Well, it depends on how you address it. To actually get rid of it, it's a vote of the people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's in our Constitution.
Got it.
I have a concept that neither requires a 3/5 nor a vote of the people. That would, in essence, gut it. It would kick occasionally, and when it did, it would be a very small amount. Because it will do exactly what I just said, there is huge popular opposition to it. People like it. Like, as you said, people don't understand it. They think it's because it's when we have too much money, we just give that money back. That's not at all what it is. But that's the talking point that the Republicans and the rich use. And so people listen to that and they're confused.
You have a lot of visionary proposals and legislative proposals, like your minimum wage proposal, your electric bike proposal. How can folks get in touch with you, get involved in helping to support the work that you do?
There's a variety of ways. Obviously, when we bring these big, hard bills, we're going to need a public outcry. We're going to need thousands and thousands of people to write personal emails, not a form email, personal emails to their legislator. They're going to have to call their legislator. They're going to have to come get a meeting with their legislator and tell them, this is an important bill. I need you to support it. So I suppose stay tuned for that point. We are working on some concepts. I told you the one we're working on around workforce. We're working on one around transmission. It takes 25 years to put a new transmission line in. We do not currently in this state have the amount of transmission we need to build out the renewable forms of energy that we need to build out in order to meet our targets. Our targets that are set in law, we will not meet them due to lack of transmission. And yet nobody is working on increasing that transmission. State bank bill, which we didn't talk about. It was my only bill that passed, which set up a task force to figure out how to fund and govern a state bank, which then it would come back as another bill to actually pass. But a state bank could do amazing things. It could fund housing construction during downturns when normal banks stop loaning on that, which is why we lost a lot of our workforce. It could fund cities and counties when they're having to build critical infrastructure like libraries and water systems and sewer systems. Those are all exceedingly expensive. The cities don't have that kind of money, so then they have to bond it. When they bond it, they spend 50% more than the actual cost of the thing. If the library costs $20 million, by the time they pay for that $20 million, they will have spent $30 million. Imagine what we could be doing with some of that money. A state bank, there would still be a cost to the money, but it could be a significantly smaller cost. We believe 50%. Hmm. So think of the millions and millions of dollars that could be saved in this state by local communities that could be plowed back into those local communities, and the interest and fees, if there are fees, that are accrued by the state bank, then go back into helping the state. That interest and fees that are accrued when you float a bond go into the pockets of Wall Street and do absolutely nothing to help the state of Oregon. So it's a wonky thing. It's hard to explain to people, but it's a big deal, and it could make a really significant difference in the state of Oregon. So if people are interested in any of these things, please write to my representative email, rep.markgamba@oregonlegislature.gov, and ask to be put on our email list, and you'll get our newsletters. We'll keep you apprised of what we're up to, what's going on in the legislature. And if they're interested in engaging with me more directly, my personal email address is mark@markgamba.com. I'm going to say that again because my computer chose to beep right in that moment. mark@markgamba.com. And they can reach me to find out other ways that they can help me do this work.
Well, great. I wish we could keep talking. This has been, if not a super uplifting look at the legislative session, at least one grounded in, you know, clear-eyed reality about the challenges we face. And yeah, I hope folks stay in touch with you, and I wish you the best of luck on your proposals, and hopefully we'll be able to have you back on soon. I'd love to do a whole episode on some of the stuff you're talking about, like the state bank. And we'll work on selling you on the Coast Range vision for industrial land reform as well. But for now, thank you so much for being on Coast Range Radio, Mark Gamba. And I hope you get some rest after that bruising first session.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on. I look forward to continuing the conversation.
And that does it for today's episode of Coast Range Radio. Huge thanks to Representative Gamba for speaking with me today. Check out the first part of our conversation by searching Coast Range Radio on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, any other podcast app. While you're there, go ahead and subscribe, and bonus points if you leave us a good review. That'll help others find the show. You can also find Coast Range Radio at our website, coastrange.org, where you can learn more about the mission and work of the Coast Range Association. Once again, my email is michael@coastrange.org. Thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. We'll be back in a couple weeks.